Further, you are stressed by the idea that you are losing your mother. Now she will be at your side, taking you to school today. How do you feel?
I feel relieved because I got knocked into the political world without even knowing about it and trying. For the last month, I've met with various politicians, various supporters, and I want to thank everybody. And there was also a petition. I want to thank the 43,000 people that signed that petition to keep Salma home / keep my mom home. So after all, I feel like the hard work paid off, and I know this is not the end, and this is just the beginning of what's going to happen in the future. But I'm just relieved that on the first day of school, we can keep the tradition going of me and my mom dropping me off in front of everybody and embarrassing me.
Well, Salma Sikander and Samir Mahmood, congratulations. And Samir, have a great
year. Thank you.
Quinnipiac. I want to wish Vesta Gadarz a happy birthday. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is exactly 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News. But first,
tune in on Thursday, August 30th at 8 p.m. to celebrate the Native programmers and the Native community of KBOO as part of our 50th anniversary. Jack Malmstrom of Rose City Native Radio will host this special on-air program. You can join us at the Native Community Open House here at KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue from 7 to 10 p.m. on August 30th. More information about the Native Community Open House and the anniversary programming can be found at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the August Amazee After Dark, featuring Insexuality, ultrasonic love songs, and death dances from the Panamanian rainforest on Wednesday, August 29th at 7:30 p.m. at Amazee in Portland. What does the world sound like to an insect or a bat? You can find out by exploring the insect music you've never heard before in surround sound under the Panamanian stars. Again, that's Amazee After Dark, featuring Insexuality, ultrasonic love songs, and death dances from the Panamanian rainforest on Wednesday, August 29th at 7:30 p.m. at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, 1945 Southeast Water Avenue in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Oregon Symphony, located at 909 Southwest Washington Street in downtown Portland, presenting Gary Trudeau, political cartoonist and creator of Doonesbury Comics, sharing from his latest book, Sad, Doonesbury in the Time of Trump, Tuesday, October 16th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and more information available by phone at 503-228-1353 or online at orsymphony.org. Hey, guess what? It's Friday, and it is 5:03, which means it is time for your KBOO Evening News to get started.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Donald Trump has told Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to cancel his upcoming trip to North Korea. Hurricane Lane dumps over 3 feet of rain on Hawaii. And the CFO for the Trump Organization has been granted immunity from prosecution. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 24th, 2018. I'm Ani.
And I'm Teresa. The U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will not be going to North Korea to continue talks after a series of public tweets from the president ordering him to cancel the meetings. The countermanding tweets came a day after Pompeo announced he would go to Pyongyang and came in the context of what had been an unhurried procedure to attain denuclearization. Pompeo had already appointed a senior executive with Ford Motor Company to be his special envoy for the North Korean talks in the new and the now canceled. The tweet stated that the reason for the turnaround was insufficient progress in taking down North Korea's nuclear weapons program. Further complicating the issue, Trump tweeted moments later, quote, "Secretary Pompeo looks forward to going to North Korea in the near future, most likely after our trading relationship with China is resolved. In the meantime, I would like to send my warmest regards to Chairman Kim. I look forward to seeing him soon," end quote. The president's tweets blamed China, saying they were not aiding the negotiations with North Korea as they once were. North Korea's lack of progress had been noted by the International Atomic Energy Association, the watchdog for nuclear proliferation, who had stated Monday that the continuation and further development of Pyongyang's nuclear programs is cause for further concern. Warmongering National Secretary National Security Advisor John Bolton said on PBS earlier this week, "We're not looking for rhetoric here. We're looking for a performance of North Korea's own commitment made to us, made to South Korea beforehand, to denuclearize." South Korea, meanwhile, is attempting to open its own path to peace. During a speech August 15th, South Korean President Moon Jae-in spoke about plans to improve relations with the North through reconciliation and economic projects.
At least 31 civilians, mostly children, have been killed after a U.S.-supplied Saudi-led airstrike hit their vehicle in Yemen's Hodeidah province. The most recent tragedy comes only 2 weeks after a strike by the invading military coalition hit a school bus, killing dozens of children. All of the victims had already been displaced from their destroyed homes. On August 9th, Saudi-led warplanes hit a school bus in the town of Dayan in northern Yemen with a 500-pound U.S. laser-guided Mark 82 bomb. That attack killed 51 people, among them 40 children. Nearly 80 others were wounded. Investigations by Yemeni authorities revealed that the bomb had been supplied by the U.S. to the Saudi-led military coalition. The Saudi-led aggression has also taken a heavy toll on the country's infrastructure, destroying many hospitals, schools, and factories. The United Nations has said that a record 22.2 million Yemenis are in dire need of food, including nearly 8.5 million threatened by severe hunger. Several Western countries, including the United States and Britain, have been accused of being complicit in the ongoing aggression. They supply the Saudi government with advanced weapons and military equipment, as well as logistical and intelligence assistance.
Pearl Harbor is nearly empty of ships and aircraft as Major Hurricane Lane brings torrential rain, damaging surf, high winds, and flooding to the Hawaiian Islands. 3 feet of rain has fallen on Hawaii's Big Island from the slow-moving hurricane, while the winds have also fanned a large brush fire on Maui near the Lahaina Resort. The Federal Emergency Management Administration is tracking the fire, which forced people to evacuate a storm shelter. They said dozens of Coast Guard ships and helicopters on the island are ready to assist. Currently, the hurricane is classified as a Category 2 storm with winds at 105 miles per hour and even faster gusts. Authorities had urged residents to stock up on 2 weeks' worth of food, water, and supplies. The Hawaiian Islands are subject to power problems after a large hurricane due to the fact that most of the electricity generated on the islands comes from diesel generators supplied by shipping. The National Weather Service says that flash floods, heavy rain, and landslides are expected to plague the islands over the next week. The main airport on the island of Maui was still open at last check, but all American Airlines flights to and from the airport were canceled. The Hawaii Department of Transportation said that all 15 airports in the state are open and said that firefighters stationed at the airports were ready for emergency response. Power lines are down in many areas, and authorities are urging people not to attempt to drive across flooded streets. Power outages affected about 4,000 people on the Big Island, 6,000 in Lahaina, and 2,600 on Molokai. The U.S. Navy said ships evacuated from Pearl Harbor will be available for emergency response after the hurricane passes.
Today's report from Climate Connections looks at the relationship between the warming of the Gulf of Mexico and last year's record rainfall with Hurricane Harvey.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. One year ago, Hurricane Harvey dumped record rainfall on southeastern Texas. Some areas received more than 40 inches of rain. According to new research, the heavy rainfall was a direct result of unusually warm temperatures in the Gulf of Mexico.
In the case of Harvey, we were able to use new measurements before and after to assess the ocean heat content in much more detail than we've ever been able to do before.
That's Kevin Trenberth of the National Center for Atmospheric Research. He says that during a hurricane, warm ocean water evaporates into the atmosphere, where its energy fuels the storm's swirling winds. And the evaporated water creates moisture that then condenses into rain. Trenberth's research on Hurricane Harvey found that the amount of heat energy released from the ocean matched the energy released as the hurricane converted that moisture into rainfall.
The direct implication is that if the oceans hadn't been that warm, there wouldn't have been so much moisture and it wouldn't have rained as hard.
Trenberth says that as oceans continue to warm, they will provide even more fuel for powerful and devastating storms. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
In today's report, Rick Smith of Labor History in 2 looks back at the United Farm Workers strike against California lettuce growers in the 1970s.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1970. That was the day that the United Farm Workers went out on strike against California lettuce growers. The United Farm Workers had led a successful boycott against grape growers that had drawn national attention to the harsh working conditions and low pay of those who harvested our nation's food. In an effort to keep the United Farm Workers from organizing lettuce workers, some of the growers had signed contracts with the Teamsters Union. The United Farm Workers argued that these contracts did not represent the workers' best interests. As thousands of workers went on strike, Cesar Chavez called for a national boycott of all non-union lettuce. In the lead-up to the strike, an estimated 4,000 workers attended a meeting in Salinas, California. One worker, Antonio Segredo, explained the importance of the action. Rael Macaredo, voice of the Farm Worker newsletter, reported his words, quote, "Let the people and the government of the United States know that we are ready to work, but that we must have what we ask. It isn't very much. We don't ask the impossible, only that they look upon us as human beings. We have the same ambitions that they do. We have families. We have rights. Why must they continue to treat us like beasts of burden and look for a thousand ways to bring us down?" That December, Cesar Chavez was jailed for leading the boycott. Putting pressure on the growers through encouraging the public to boycott non-union harvested food was a key tactic for the farm workers' movement. It impacted the bottom line of the growers and moved them to sit down at the bargaining table. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
According to a report in The Oregonian, Portland artist Mike Schneider is making it official with the boyfriend he built out of wine boxes. Schneider skyrocketed to internet fame when his wine box boyfriend was linked to the phrase, "men are trash." Now Schneider said he and the boyfriend, Franz, are ready to take the relationship to the next level. Schneider told the paper that, quote, "the next step is to meet the in-laws. I know already my mom will love him. I don't know so much about my dad. As far as the wedding goes, he is looking for a venue right now. Ideally," he said, "we'd love to have a local venue donate their space and have the wedding be a fundraiser for the ACLU. Of course, Franz is not actually alive and the relationship is an ongoing art project. As far as reaction to the project, Schneider said, "it's been interesting. Strangers have a lot of different reactions, but our love is just like anyone else's love," Schneider said. "I love that people engage with this in different ways," he said. "They alternately say the photos as funny, or eye-roll worthy, or as a symbol of loneliness. And they're all right."
Well, Emmett Week reports the famous and very popular fast food chain In-N-Out Burger from California is opening a location just 45 minutes from Portland. The fast food chain seems to be inching towards Portland with two other restaurants in Oregon. The third one is in the Salem area. This means Portlanders will soon be able to drive to an In-N-Out without having to drive to Medford, Grants Pass, or California, and the same is also true for labor organizers. Willamette Week wrote, "Rumors of the restaurant opening in the Salem area have circulated since February when the restaurant's logo appeared on a boarded-up building in downtown Salem. It turned out to be a prank, but the company responded by saying it was in fact evaluating sites in the surrounding area for a possible expansion. On Thursday, City Council confirmed the franchise would be opening a location in the Kaiser Station Mall."
Federal prosecutors have granted immunity to Trump Organization Chief Financial Officer Alan Weisselberg. The immunity was provided as part of the ongoing investigation into Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen. Earlier this week, Cohen pleaded guilty to charges of fraud and campaign finance violations. Weisselberg's link to the Trump family goes back years. Prosecutors have accused the CFO of instructing a fellow Trump Organization employee to provide Cohen with the hush money used to pay Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels. The immunity granted to Weisselberg only adds to the legal woes in what has been a week full of legal pitfalls for the president.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6 o'clock. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow in Portland, we'll see a cloudy day with temperatures in the low 70s. East of the Cascades and Hood River, you'll have similar conditions. Today in history, France became the world's fifth thermonuclear power with a detonation on Mururoa Atoll in South Pacific. The quote of the day is from Albert Einstein. He said, "I know not with what weapons World War III will be fought, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones."
Donald Trump has never been accused of displaying presidential behavior, whatever that means. But as the criminal investigations into his organization result in guilty verdicts, his behavior has begun to resemble that of an underworld boss. KBOO's Ray Bodwell has these thoughts.
Whether the guilty verdict against former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort and the guilty plea by Trump fixer Michael Cohen are enough to bring down the Trump regime remains to be seen. But regardless of how this embarrassing national nightmare plays out, the true nature of the president and his organization has been revealed, and the organization that comes closest to representing the ideals and behaviors of the Trump organization is the mafia. In both word and deed, Trump is playing the role of a boss in a criminal enterprise that is collapsing. He has described John Dean, the former White House counsel whose testimony was instrumental in bringing down Richard Nixon, as a rat. He applauded former Capitol regime Paul Manafort's refusal to, quote, break, end quote, and tweeted that he had such respect for a brave man. Just to be clear, Trump's poster child for bravery and the object of Trump's respect was found guilty on 8 of 18 counts of bank and tax fraud, and it was only saved from a guilty verdict on all 18 counts by a single juror who wouldn't be swayed. Michael Cohen, Trump's former consigliere, and the man who once claimed that he would, quote, take a bullet from Mr. Trump, end quote, stated in his plea deal that he had paid hush money to two women at the direction of the president. Trump fired back in a Fox interview claiming that Cohen had made the whole story up and that plea bargaining, or flipping as he referred to it, should be against the law.
It's called flipping, and it almost ought to be illegal. You get 10 years in jail, but if you say bad things about somebody, in other words, make up stories, if you don't know, make up stories, they just make up lies.
During that same interview, he seemed to suggest that his economic performance should protect him from impeachment.
I don't know how you can impeach somebody who's done a great job. I'll tell you what, if I ever got impeached, I think the market would crash.
Yesterday, longtime Trump pal David Pecker, publisher of the National Enquirer, was granted immunity by federal prosecutors. Pecker apparently had a safe containing documents on hush money payments and other damaging stories on Donald Trump that he killed leading up to the 2016 presidential election. Manafort's guilty verdict and Cohen's guilty plea validate the work of the Mueller investigation and the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York, but they're probably not enough to bring about Trump's impeachment. But I do believe that ultimately this week's findings of guilt will turn out to be just the tip of a criminal iceberg. Whispers of tax, bank, and real estate fraud, as well as money laundering, have dogged the Trump Organization for years. Constitutional scholars and the Justice Department are of the opinion that indictments cannot be brought against the sitting president. But those same protections do not extend to the president's advisors or his family. And as the investigation progresses, the legal threat to Don Jr., Eric, and Jared will increase. It will then be interesting to see how long the Don's family members observe omerta, the mafia code of silence, as investigators start to zero in on them. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
And now here's today's report from National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation in North Dakota is suing the federal government to protect a lake from development. Chairman Mark Fox told the Bismarck Tribune the tribe has exhausted appeals to the government, which approve oil wells closer to the lake than allowed by tribal regulations. The developers say the wells are on private land. The tribe's concerned about drinking water and cultural resources. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe celebrated the homecoming of professional basketball player Kyrie Irving and his sister Asia to the Native Nation. The descendants of the tribe were honored Thursday in North Dakota with a naming ceremony, dances, and a community feed. In this clip by ESPN, Irving expressed to the crowd how special it was for him to be there and to acknowledge his Native heritage.
The support has been there, even without necessarily knowing each other, shows how special and what it means to be a native of this country and be a Native American. And for me, I had no idea. I had no idea about the history. I had no idea how inclusive this group is and what it means to be part of Standing Rock and be part of the United Sioux Nation. So I want to thank all you guys for hosting myself, my sister, my best friend Brett Carroll, my grandparents, and the fact that I get to meet my family finally. I mean, you guys have no idea. This is finally meeting my mom's family, and now I'm with you guys forever, and I hope that you don't mind that, because I don't mind it either. So,
Irving's late mother was adopted out of the tribe as a child. The tribe traced her roots to the White Mountain family of Standing Rock. The Boston Celtics star received the name Little Mountain and his sister Buffalo Woman. The Lakota names come from their ancestors. A Southeast Alaska Cultural Center will study a Tlingit bentwood box drum that's more than 130 years old. By scanning the box, century-old details are returning to the surface. KTOO's Trip Krause talked with Sea Alaska Heritage Institute about the process.
Sea Alaska Heritage is studying the carvings and paintings on the wooden Tlingit drum, which is on loan from the Huna-based Tok'Dantan clan. Chuck Smythe is the director for the Cultural and History Department at Sea Alaska Heritage.
It's a bentwood box with the back side is open and the front side has a carved piece attached to it that looks to be a bear and some other designs on it that are carved into it.
Many details have been lost to age, so Sea Alaska Heritage enlisted infrared scanning to help bring them back.
And the idea of infrared photography is to bring out what's not visible on the surface and what's not visible here through the dark surface of this drum and see what the painting might be.
Smythe says the full-size box drum this far north and southeast is unusual.
Well, the paintings were just very unusual. They're not sort of standard form line. We could see some salmon on one side and other side, we knew there were some sort of figures there, but we couldn't really tell what they were before that photography. It's kind of a voice from the past, and that's what's so exciting about it.
Smy says he hopes the drum designs inspire present-day artists to create new formline designs. In Juneau, I'm Trip J. Krause.
More than $600,000 has been awarded to Navajo Technical University from the National Science Foundation. The funds will go to improve broadband. Officials say the college's internet issues have long impacted teaching and distant and online learning. The grant will help improve network speeds and bandwidth. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
A group dedicated to creating a positive influence within the African American community will celebrate its second annual family bike ride from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday, August 26th at Gresham's Main City Park, 219 South Main Avenue. The event, hosted by a Black United Family, will have community building, food, games, and plenty of family-friendly fun. The beginner's ride starts at 11:30 a.m., while the advanced ride follows at 12:30 p.m. The plan is to ride rain or sunshine. The family bike ride is supported by the Portland NAACP, African American Outdoor Association, Black Girls Do Bike, and the City of Gresham.
Jet Propulsion Laboratory, a part of NASA, is planning a mission to send a tiny spacecraft more than 4 light years away, according to the Alpha Centauri Star Group. The mission is planned for the year 2069, 51 years from now, to celebrate the centennial of the 1969 moon landing. The spacecraft will be small enough to be accelerated by an enormous laser pulse after it deploys a light sail. Further acceleration will be provided by the sun's rays. The two power sources will bring the object to 20% of the speed of light, more than 30,000 miles per second, making an interstellar journey possible. The equipment and power systems on the vehicle will have to be robust enough to take micrometeor collisions at that tremendous velocity. When it arrives in the Alpha Centauri system at 4.4 light years away, the nearest star other than the Sun, it will use gravity braking maneuvers and repositioning of its light sails to decelerate. As it slows down, it may be able to explore the Earth-like planet there designated Proxima B. The probe would be arriving around the year 2113, 95 years from now, and its transmissions will take more than 4 years to arrive back at the JPL laboratories.
You are listening to the KABU Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032, extension 203. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell and Lucas. Our producer tonight is Teresa Mitchell. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. Our interim news directors for the PM News and Public Affairs Department are Sam Bowman and Teresa Mitchell. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website, kboo.fm/evening news. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KABU News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. On K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and on K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, and at 6 o'clock, Bread and Roses. I'm Ani.
I'm Teresa.
And on Monday... Well... With that, we say, and thank you, and good night, Teresa, and good night, Jenna.
Good night, everybody. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Counterspin. You were just listening to the KBOO Evening News, a local broadcast brought to you by volunteers who come in every single weekday to produce the news for you, because this is community radio made by you and for you. We'd like to thank everyone who has contributed to make KBOO Community Radio possible. Not a member? Guess what? You can become one today. Just go on to kboo.fm and there is a donate button right there on the top of the page. Because you know what? Listening and knowing that you're one of the people that make it possible just make the listening even better. That's kboo.fm. And guess what? It's time for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, a popular internet meme says, "I have a question about Space Force. When is Flint getting clean water?" But while social media reflect complaints that the Trump administration's plans to address space as a developing war-fighting domain, as Defense Secretary Jim Mattis has it, will mean still more resources channeled away from social programs to Warmongering Inc., that line of questioning has so far had little place in corporate media coverage. We'll talk about the prospect of war in space with longtime FAIR associate Carl Grossman, journalism professor at